What do I need to do to make that work? Or do you care about slides? The slides just say what I'm going to say out loud anyway, so. No. Okay. Rather than boring everyone with that. No, it's fine. So I've had this minor rant that's been building up for a while, which is that I think unstable is kind of earning its name more and more and more, and it doesn't need to. And I think we're doing ourselves a disservice and making it harder to release as a result. By analogy, Squid 3, a project I've been very heavily involved in, single transition the code base from C to C++. We broke the main line as we did that, and we still haven't released. 3.5 years, I think it is on. Pardon? Oh, okay. BZR, another project I'm very heavily involved in, has done several major overhauls of internals, and it releases monthly. And the main line has never been broken. These are not unrelated things. I don't have enough data here to stand up and prove causation as opposed to correlation. But when we look at things like C++ transitions, Python transitions, toolchain transitions, kernel version transitions, in the past, I'm going back to potato days and to libc5 to libc6, we've done a very, very smooth job with the transition. These days, we seem to have the attitude that it's okay to break our trunk that is unstable for some period of time while we go through the transition. And the problem is, we're a volunteer organization, which means we don't have guaranteed resources after we break something to repair it. This is actually really the fundamental point. We're breaking something on the gamble that we'll have enough resources to fix it. And I think that's a really, really silly mistake for a volunteer organization. In terms of working with software development and other projects, smaller scale, but I think we have a scale problem, not a qualitative change. The idea is that you perform transitions out of the mainline. You perform them in a branch or in a working area that's dedicated to the transition, and when you've completed the transition, you then apply it to your mainline. And you can think of the Debian archive as a form of revision control system. It's not a single atomic commits because each package is going up at its own rate, but you can, for any individual package, see its timeline, and for the whole thing, you can see a timeline. So some of the transitions done recently have used sort of branches. They've created their own little temporary repositories. I'll come back to you in just a sec. And as a result, I felt that those transitions went more smoothly. More being a relative term, because again, they didn't complete the transition outside of our mainline. Anyway, that's the thrust of my point. And what I'm actually hoping is that this will be interesting enough that folk are going to now start throwing heckles, jeers, and forcing me to defend this position, and we can have a good old discussion about it. And hopefully someone will write this up and take it to the list, and we can get some motivation behind it. So one of the problems is that if you have an easy example, say you've got a package, single source, two outputs. One output is an all, it's data, and one output is a binary. The lockstep version between the two of them, so you need this common data file in the current format for that binary. If you load less than the full set of architectures that you're hoping to release with into the archive at once, anything less than the full set, and you have now broken the architectures you didn't upload until it builds, if it builds. So if you're going to use branches in this manner, you actually need full auto-build support across the whole set of architectures to be able to say with any significant degree of confidence, particularly given the fragility of the tool chain on the smaller architectures, that you've achieved, we are done, we are qualitatively, we're confident in the quality of what we've achieved. You really have sold out, haven't you? Salient point.
I think Debian can take a couple of action items from this. having worked on Debian for a couple of years and then after that worked on Ubuntu almost exclusively, I think, and you know, they release every 6 months modular DevOps. I think the salient point would be less that breaking mainline and more of guaranteed resources.
I mentioned resources first, but Ubuntu is got guaranteed resources, so it can commit. It can estimate how much work's involved, and then it can break something because it knows that it's able to sit down and fix it up. But I don't think Devin can afford to do that. Right, so if you keep your mainline always releasable, it doesn't mean it is actually ready for release, but that you're not deliberately breaking it. If, as far as you know, you're not causing any regressions, then you're in a good position at any point in time to stop further changes, stabilize, and release.
But there are often deliberate regressions on the, along the glorious path, but at some stage, you dev breaks and, well, I don't have any devices at all.
But how frequently do you get that kind of catastrophic break?
So, I think there's a fairly big difference between you uploaded something that an upstream said to you, hey, this is good, and you found that it wasn't, and you had to roll back the package. And, you know, people shouldn't be afraid of epics. They're a useful thing. You should look at this, I think, in terms of deliberately screwing things. If you upload the UDEV that's only going to work with the next release of the kernel coming up because you really want to get that into Debian now, and you wonder why things break across the board, that's very, very different from, oops, something has gone wrong, let's fix this bug. So I actually have a theory on this, which is that we've gotten the habit of not caring at breaking unstable. We're treating it as something which is allowed to be messed up for a bit. And if we get rid of that attitude, even if we don't change exactly what we're doing day to day, that over time should provide a steer back to what we were doing years ago that worked well. I think psychologically that would be a really good idea. And I suggest the term trunk, which fits with the general structure or mainline. I mean, it's a revision control problem fundamentally. It's not structured as a traditional one, but when you look at what we're doing, concurrent software development, multiple modules being changed in parallel, and we're trying to go through a quality control process and lead to a release. Am I talking about Debian or are I talking about a piece of software? I mean, AJ. All architectures? Do we have the ability to say, so it may not be fundamentally different, and I haven't proposed that it is fundamentally different. However, the first thing that appears different to me is that you only have one experimental. Whereas if you have a transition for KDE, new version of KDE, and a transition for a C++ ABI going on at the same time, different sets of people interested in them, you can't do them both in experimental without treading on each other's feet. If you had branches, just as a conceptual thing, you could do one, do the other. Whoever gets into the mainline first, the other one has to accommodate. So I'd suggest that what's actually needed is something where you can, a smoother interface between the developers who need to rebuild things during transitions and the build Ds is one thing, and secondly, the ability to create named branches with a relatively low weight thing that the existing auto builders for experimental will pick up and build. Really, we're working in the binaries.
And being told to get stuck.
Yeah. I've been told to get stuck by lots of things.
So I think the key thing for me is we've done better in the past. Why aren't we doing better now? You possibly have a better memory of it than me, but
Bobby was one too.
My memory is that, except for accidental trauma, it generally think packed libraries bubbled across as they got done.
But the same thing happened with the C++. It was a different package naming convention, and they kept going through slowly.
And very significant chunks of the archive were completely uninstallable for a few weeks. At least for me.
Whatever.
That's not smooth. And so the key thing that I've suggested here is that we start using the concept of branches when we're doing transitions, that we don't upload them into unstable at all until we believe we've made all the package changes we need, is that you have a place that you can do this experimentation, make the mistakes, and recognize them without affecting the stability of the development that's been done outside of the transition space. Right, but that makes that so. Okay, so this is the same argument that's used against using branches when you're developing a single piece of software. We won't know that branch is ready unless we have a significant number of testers. This is fallacious. There are a whole bunch of ways that you can get fairly coarse-grained answers. PIUPARTS will give you some idea about installability issues. You could run every binary and just see whether or not it seg faults, for example, or even manages to resolve all the symbols. I'm not saying that these are as good as having 400,000 people running the thing at a point in time and able to tell you where you're at, but it's much better than, hey, yep, that particular package uploaded okay. Oh, it's failing to build on all of the non-Bigendian architectures. And it's got multiple concurrent version dependencies that force it in lockstep. The data files are incompatible. And this is the sort of thing that actually makes this a complex thing rather than a simple thing. It's not as simple as not making mistakes. You have to know, you have to be able to tell the future to tell that these transitions are going to work properly. And that's the fundamental problem. Oh, I used Squid 3, which was a large transition to C++ for the Squid code base, and BZR, which is a Python version control system.
And I'm fairly sure BZR has a lot of test suites and stuff.
Yeah, it's got about four and four.
That correlates to the stuff breaking.
Squid 3 has a test suite that's got a much smaller number of tests than BZR. But the ability to tell whether you've broken something or not is what I think the correlation is. In BZR, they can tell, or we can tell, when something's broken by running the test suite, and the test suite runs in a reasonable amount of time. With Squid, it's much harder to tell if you've broken something or not. Some ad hoc testing really isn't sufficient. However, we were discussing in the Squid community recently that we'd made serious mistakes with the transition, and it was primarily focused around the fact that we broke stuff. We went did much more than we should have to just be able to say, okay, we've made that one change, stop. Do it in such a way that nothing is broken at any point. We've got some package testing infrastructure in Debian now. Ian Jackson wrote a Debian package testing framework which will use Xen, run stuff up, run test suites specific to the package. We can write test suites that work on the packaging information level, and it can also run the test suites within each package. And there's a growing swell of testing, automated testing being done in the open source world. Adapting a package to be able to run those tests during the build process is not hard. I certainly recommend any package you're packaging that has its own test suite should be run if it's feasible to do that. Andrew Suffield wrote an ABI checker. You have to manually hook it in to libraries, but it's able to tell reasonably accurately whenever an ABI changes incompatibly due to either the compiler or the software changing itself. So that can tell you when you're doing an upload of a package or a build of a package, whether you've got an incompatible ABI change and need to change the SOA name. I mean, it's a big problem, but what I feel at the moment is that we're not really tackling the problem. We're not trying and failing. That's... I think, to use what? Yeah, well, sorry, I thought you said SVN. Well, he uses a source code control system.
He does.
Right. Well, so he sat down and said what he had needed, and somebody who at the time wrote what he had said he'd needed. So in terms of this discussion here, if I'm talking to folk who have a clear idea of what they need to be able to do the sorts of things I'm talking about, then surely getting that written down somewhere so someone who's got the time and interest can write it would be the best approach. I don't particularly feel like someone can try to convince Linus to use source code control, no. I think it's a completely different problem. So,
you
It's been done in an ad hoc manner for some transitions by people setting up their own little build D networks with their own repository and asking folk to look at it. And I think that the fact people are starting to do this of their own bat suggests that it's at least a reasonable approach to the problem, and getting the infrastructure maintainers within Debian to make it easier to do that, to give project support for this approach, is really the heart of, if you like to say I've got a proposal, that's the heart of it. Try harder. Yep.
Yeah, sorry, that was quite cool. So in about 2003, Keith and Jim set up an Xlibs and Xserver repository, and gradually over time, myself, Keith, and a couple of others got to adding build systems for everything. We had it at a point where you could build from the very bottom of the protocol stack right to a functional Xorg server and have it all work on a machine that should never add Xbits and stuff. Those two trees were dead, and they were basically DOA because the concept was broken. We spent so long trying to replace a 20-year-old build system and the code changes that ensued that mainline had diverged far too far, and in the end, with all the stabilization work we needed to do, doing it in mainline and essentially having a flag there wasn't an option. So what we came to do in the end was release 6.9 and 7.0 in parallel with the exact same code base and just different build systems. So what we did was we built the build system tree in parallel and basically symlinked all the files in. And so that way people who didn't want to build and stuff didn't have to care about modular if they didn't want to.
I'm a little confused. What's your point? not to be rude. It's just it seems like a very long way of describing.
Sorry, I'm getting it. But yeah, the only reason that worked in the end is because it, instead of trying to do an enormous transition and forcing it on everyone, the only way we were able to do it was letting people route around it, unless they were explicitly interested in it.
Okay, so. So you're supporting the idea of having branches for transitions in Debian?
I'm saying it worked
once. Okay. Well, I think it's worked more than once. I haven't tracked exactly how every transition has been done, sit down and give figures, but it's not uncommon. It's just not supported. It's not really encouraged. And it's not discouraged to do major transitions in unstable. So that's really, I think we need social pressure against breaking the mainline, and we need infrastructure support to make it easier to do transitions without breaking the mainline.
I disagree with that a bit, in that it is encouraged to use experimental code to make transitions, and is discouraged to do transitions at least for the last 6 months in unstable.
Right. So when I say it's not discouraged, I don't mean that right now we're not locked down. What I mean is that when we're not trying to release. Well, at least 1DD didn't get the message. So look, experimental keeps getting brought up whenever someone sits down and has a discussion about how we've got problems and I've got software that's not really ready to release and where should I build it. I think experimental has the basic problem that it's not essentially a full branch devoted to a specific one thing. It's a shared branch that anyone can dogpile on. And if I remember correctly, the standard way of using experimental is to grab individual packages out of it. When you're doing a transition, you need all of the relevant packages, and you don't want two different transitions working in the same area at once. So experimental, yeah, it's a useful thing in the way we're managing stuff today, but I don't think it does the job I'm talking about. Well, it's not necessarily that mechanical. There may be a lot of mechanical parts in it, but as soon as you have to patch your package.
It's something that just has to be done. It's not, we're not testing to see if the new C++ API works or anything like that. We're going through and doing it.
Well, see, the problem is that you end up testing it because when packages fail to build, as soon as you fail to build from source during the process, you're making package changes, you're making code changes. And you may think they're not particularly big, but it stopped being mechanical. Now, if you said, okay, a new Perl version that's a minor point release and guarantees won't break any Perl and you just need to do a rebuild with a newer Perl version to get encoded in the binary package, that might be much more in the line of a mechanical one. But I think... as soon as you're digging with something, it's not that mechanical. Can you automate some of these things to a large degree? Yes. Should we do that in unstable where if it breaks halfway through, it's broken halfway through? That's the question. So you made the point that you think these things, that there is a qualitative difference between a transition that is significant software development, you're expecting to do a lot of software development, and a transition you're expecting to be basically mechanical, a large-scale grep and awk problem.
More in the line of a new version of apt and a new version of the package were kicked around in experimental for a long time. They were put there, people could play with them, people could test them.
Right.
But it wasn't meant to be a coherent set of
programs.
In the same way that, say, the C++ API thing was huge number of packages that had to be changed.
Right.
So,
look, to use an analogy with a single project's software development and revision control, that's the difference between someone who's gotten an experimental patch for their video card in the X tree, and they say, download my branch of this driver, and someone else who is changing the entire infrastructure for the memory management for hardware acceleration and is going and affecting all drivers. It's a locality thing. You will still have people who need... I need to track that transition, the big, large-scale one, because I'm contributing into it, but I also have the video card that needs this other minor patch, and I want to be able to merge these branches. This is the sort of thing you get when you have branches. You have conflicting needs, two different transitions going on at once, however big or small they are. You've got to be able to keep them isolated for folk that are not interested in dealing with multiple battlefronts at once. And it's much more than just folk who are not interested in it. It's a fundamental problem if you have conflicting changes going on at once to really be able to say either change has been done fully and properly until you get to the very far end. And when you combine changes like that, you get the situation Daniel was talking about where you have had a long period of time before you think you're ready, and by that point, the mainline, which has been going along unimpacted, is now sufficiently different. It's a hard problem to try and combine the game. So, yeah. All right, cool. Sorry.
How can it be made easier for developers to take this approach? I think that a lot of developers aren't doing it now because it's a lot of extra work, it's a lot of extra effort to do. How can that be made easier? I'm sure more people will do it if it's something that's straightforward and simple.
I'm not on the infrastructure team. I don't run build Ds. so I'm not really the best person to answer that question. I think we've already discussed today things that could be done that would require effort to do, but that would give that sort of facility in a reasonable manner. This is something that, if it's going to be done, is going to require significant buy-in and long discussions and probably three or four flame wars. I did. I've been sold out too. You've got to remember that. I'm just better at hiding it. Thank you.